Coming up, if someone you know is eating ramen, having a rough life, and feeling discouraged, this is the interview that I want you to give them. You'll see why. Also, do you secretly have faith? I mean, spiritual faith. Well, wait till you see the shocking thing that happened to today's guest because of their faith. Ooh, it'll amaze you. Also, 2017, baby. There's someone out there that Karen, Juan, and I will meet by the year 2017. I predict it, and you will see what I mean towards the end of this interview. All that and so much more is coming up. Stay tuned. Listen up. I hate to have commercials interrupt this interview, so I'm going to tell you about three sponsors quickly now, and then we're going to go right into the program, starting with Walker Corporate Law. If you need a lawyer who understands the startup world and the tech community, I want you to go to walkercorporatelaw.com. Next, I want to tell you about Shopify. When your friend asks you, how can I sell something online? I want you to send them to Shopify and explain to them that Shopify stores are easy to set up, they increase sales, and they'll make your friend's products look great. Shopify. Finally, I want to tell you about Grasshopper. Do you want a phone number that people can call and then press 1 for sales, 2 for tech support, etc., and have all of the calls be routed to the right person's cell phone? Well, get your number from grasshopper.com. All right, let's get started. Hey there, freedom fighters. My name is Andrew Warner, and I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. You know it, guys. In this interview, we're going to find out how a husband and wife who used to clean houses built a profitable online cleaning business. She's nodding. She remembers those days. Juan Chaparro. I'm doing it in my best Spanish accent.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Karen Lespina are the founders of GMaids, a maid and cleaning service in Dallas that brought online tactics to an industry that was stuck in the offline world. They also created maidsradar.com, technology that allows on-demand booking for other maid companies. Guys, welcome.
Thank you, Andrew. It's a pleasure to see you again.
What's your revenue right now?
Well, it's above the 100K, of course, but we don't usually share that info. So, All right. It was profitable.
You say good to see you again because you and I first saw each other at a conference in where was it? In Miami, right?
Right.
Miami.
The Miami conference. Soon afterwards, you met Neil Patel. Neil Patel actually got your story. I mean, he really understood it. He did a blog post about it, which is headlined basically how a 27-year-old maid makes $150,000 a year. What happened after that?
In our business side or personally?
In the business.
Well, some people started coming a lot through our website, looking, I guess, for more story. Obviously, there was no growth of new customers because most of his audience is entrepreneurs or young people who have internet businesses. But I saw some growth in couple of clients in Dallas, but mainly what this happened is that stirred up the market and a lot of people started opening maid services.
So not a lot of business came out of it, but you did get a lot of competitors because of it.
Yeah.
Apparently I interviewed a competitor who read that article and ended up doing a similar business. We'll get to that later. First, I want to hear your story and focus on that. Let me see. Juan, you became an illegal immigrant in the U.S., because of a clerical error, is that right?
Yes. When I was going through school in Houston, they lost my documents, my papers, and basically when I wanted to renew the visa, the student visa, the person who was managing that, he left, and they couldn't find him. So basically, I was, you know, I finished school, and I couldn't renew or have a visa or anything. So I just stayed illegal for a couple of years.
So in a situation like that, if your paperwork is lost, you just become illegal immigrant. Sorry, bad luck happens. Move on.
Kinda, yeah. Since there's no support of the school that you could say that, you know, I wanted to continue going through school, and
because it gets renewed, it depends upon the verification of the school that you're still in school. And if they don't have your file, they completely lost the file. So I'm guessing they cleaned up the office and it went.
They couldn't find anything about me. It's so weird.
Were you guys dating at the time?
Yeah. Yeah, we were. Yeah.
Did you consider getting married just for your, actually, Karen, I'll ask you, did you consider marrying Juan just so he can stay in the country legally?
Legally, that's always a question everybody asks me because we got married really young, but that was just part of the benefit. It wasn't the reason why. I
Okay.
mean, you don't stay married a year with somebody just for the papers. I'm building business and work 24 hours together just for the papers. Definitely not.
Juan, if there was gay marriage allowed in the country, I would have married you just to keep you in the country. I feel like the country needs to keep smart entrepreneurs, good, productive people in it, and court them and send them welcome packages and stick around. Like, we should send them a drip email campaign just to keep the good people in this country. But apparently,
Agree.
politicians don't agree with
I
me.
guess that's part of the story, and that's why we had some struggles to go through, and that helped us build a business and ourselves as people,
As immigrants, yeah.
as immigrants. Yeah.
It's just a powerful story, and it's just one of the things that when you look back, it's just one of the hardships that you have to go through. There's a stigma if you're an illegal immigrant and you try to find your way here in the country. It's just like I wasn't illegal. My grandparents lived here in the States for a long time and then moved to Colombia, etc. But I was able to see that reality through Juan and his experience. And although he came legally into the country as a student and was not doing any harm or whatnot, it was just a struggle trying to find a way.
So then Juan started looking around outside hardware stores and got an idea. What did you see outside hardware stores?
Well, since I was a mechanic, I was fixing up cars out of, out of parts stores, and I was doing that, but it was really competitive. People were charging really low money, and a friend of us introduced us to cleaning homes. He said, you could make
Wait, hang on. I don't want to over. I don't want to brush over what you were doing there. You saw that people were standing outside of hardware stores, basically looking for day labor, right? They were day laborers who were looking for work, and you said, "Okay, I'm an illegal immigrant here. I don't know how to reshingle a house, but I do like cars." And so you took this interest. I gotta tell this story because I think this has an entrepreneurial feel to it. So with that passion, what did you do?
I just went to the AutoZones and O'Reilly's and all of these stores and started basically. I made like a big piece of cardboard and
We
make
still
an
had
ad.
at home.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Karen, what does the cardboard say on it?
It's this
It was
I would
like
need to look for
combos,
it, but
like four-cylinder
he
car.
made this combo. So like if it's a certain cylinder car, it's a certain price, and if you want to include the oil, there's a discounted price.
It had
It's just
upsells and everything.
Really?
yeah.
Yeah.
I
That's
gotta see that.
cool.
Would you take a picture of it and put it in the comments if people ask for it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'll have it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna let the audience ask for it and demand it. And basically, what you were saying is, if someone walked out with a part, you'd walk up to them and say, "Hey, you know what? I can install that part for you, or I can replace what you've got with what you just bought for a couple of bucks, and also upsell you on a couple of other things."
Yeah, that's it. Just
That's
approach.
entrepreneurial. Why didn't you tell that story right now? Is it because were you feeling like you've told it before and so it's not interesting, or what kept you from saying it?
No, just I think it was brave, and I was accustomed to talking to people because I was selling things always. So, but yeah.
Okay. Jeremy in the pre-interview asked Juan why he had to build a business, why he had to do something, and he said, "I was just tired of living in a small apartment and eating ramen." Karen, how did you feel about that period in your lives?
Oh man, that was tough because I was living in California at the time, and he would call me and he'll be like, "Well, I'm doing kind of mechanical work, things like that." But there was a point that he was eating ramen noodles, and it's just like that was all he was eating, and it was just like it's just heartbreaking. And I guess that's one of the reasons why we decided to start working early on together because, he had ideas, and I was interested in making them happen as well. So we partnered as a working team. So whatever he did, I just like helped him out,
Yeah.
and then it keeps moving forward. He'll share later how we built our first website and things like that. But it's just heart-wrenching because, I mean, sometimes he would have to go to a gas station to warm them up.
To just, warm up the ramen.
Yeah, to pour the water and warm them up. So, yeah.
And so how did you become a maid? I guess you both became maids. How did you do it?
Yeah, well, it's a friend of us.
A couple of friends,
Which we're very grateful. They just tell us, hey, guys, you seem like a nice couple. Why don't you clean homes? We can teach you. You can make $100 a day, you know, cleaning a few homes. And so we said, sure, we're not making as much doing, you know, mechanical work here. So we started to do that, and they just show us, teach us. And now we decided to start getting our own clients. But before that, we work at a maid service company. Who was, you know, paying us like $5-6 an hour and, you know, working us all day. And we kind of saw all the things that really were not right in that business. So we just said, you know, we're going to start our own business.
For example, what did you see that wasn't right?
Mainly the payment. People were, you know, companies were charging like, you know, $150, $200 for a house, let's say. And then the crew who were cleaning were getting like $30. $40 is, I mean, something just super low. So we saw that, you know, we're seeing these big checks and we're getting like really tiny checks at the end of the week. And we said, you know, it's not right. I mean, we're doing all the work. Yeah, they're funding the client, but we're doing all the work, and we believe we should be, you know, paid well.
I remember the numbers, but I remember the first 2 weeks that we worked, we got a check for $600 for the both of us. So when you put that into a full hour, you know, full days of work times 2 weeks, and it for two people,
$150 a person for a full week of work.
Right.
Yeah. So.
So our friends.
How did you even do it in the first place? I mean, you guys are smart people, well-educated, going places in the world, business people today, so proves that if you thought that you had any intelligence, that you obviously did. And you were cleaning people's houses. Why did you do that?
Well, she could tell you more, but...
Well, I was 18 at the time, so I didn't have any college education yet. There's not many few jobs to give... that are available without any college education. And the ones that were required is that in Dallas, either you have a car, you pretty much cannot do anything. We only had one car, so it had to be something that we had to do together. It would have to be the same schedule. And it would have to allow us to have free time in the night so that we could develop other business ideas. I mean, the cleaning part was never going to be a big thing like it is right now. It was just something temporary. We're going to just do this for 6 months till we get our, you know, other businesses in order, whatever we have. So it met certain requirements that that we needed at that time.
Plus, I didn't have any documents to work, so that was my only option as well.
Why didn't you want to say that?
Because it's just there's just such a stigma to it that but I guess it's also encouraging that you overcome those kind of things. I guess I don't know. It's a reality that many cleaning companies do hire illegal immigrants, although they claim they not.
You guys also sold things through multi-level marketing. What did you sell?
We sold soap. Makeup,
vitamins.
We were in several. There was one that was cookware, so we would sell door-to-door cookware in the Texas heat in summer.
What attracted you to these businesses?
Huh?
What attracted you to those businesses?
I think mainly was that you could make your own money, any amount that you wanted, right? There was no limit, like 8 an hour, 6 an hour. It was like just
my commission,
performance commission. So we've always been driven by, you know.
Did you go to those seminars and watch someone on stage and have them take you through this process? What was it? What do you remember?
He's like, you're asking for too much.
Oh, I'll tell you what I remember from. I went to one. I worked at this place, and this guy who worked there, I won't even say where I work, but one of the guys who worked there said, Andrew, you look like a really smart person. I want to talk to you about where you're going in the world. And I was just like in college, and I said, someone's actually identifying me as a smart person who's going someplace. So I went, and he goes, but to come to this meeting, you need to wear a suit and tie. Well, I didn't really have a suit and tie that looked good, but I wore what I had. I went out there, and it turned out to be a multi-level marketing thing. And the guy was, like you said, hooting, hollering up on stage. Everyone was in suits, so you feel like, well, these people are all important, and they're coming here to watch it. And they had this one exercise where they had you visualize how successful you were going to be as you were doing this multi-level marketing and everyone got worked up, and I never signed up. But do you remember what it was for you that got you worked up? That part of the visualization, I remember.
Yeah, mainly that you could achieve these dreams and these houses and these cars and this money. And obviously, you know, we were lacking all of these things. So, yeah, this makes sense. So we were doing that in the mornings or afternoons, excuse me. And in the mornings, we were cleaning homes, trying to, you know, in the meantime, grow this big multi-level marketing business, which you never grew. It just took money away from us. But it left us a good, you know, the knowledge and the courage that we got through the reading of the books and, you know, getting together with other people, that helped us really build, you know, good courage and strength in ourselves. So,
you know what, that's a good point. I want to give the full picture because I do remember years before Mixergy, I went to just take a look at different companies and how they sold, and a few multi-level marketing programs that I saw had real sales meetings that the person at the up of the top of the pyramid or close to the top of the pyramid would have. They were really insightful, useful, helpful, and I wanted to implement them in whatever business I started afterwards. Still haven't had a chance to, but I can see the power of that. All right, yeah. I can also see what you guys are building to. At some point, you discovered that you're going to build this business. What was that thing that made you go from being a pair that cleaned homes to suddenly having a business of your own?
Mainly while I was cleaning, I was always listening to podcasts and downloading iTunes stuff and marketing books, just anything business related. So I was like brainwashing myself to not be in the reality of cleaning homes. So, after reading and listening to books, one of the books that really changed us was The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. And, you know, that book taught that you should implement a franchise-style business that could grow without you and so forth. So we said, okay, this sounds great, but let's see if this works in reality. And then we just started applying these principles into the business just to see if it works.
Were you just selling your own services at first?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Our own services. So we started to apply, you know, slowly each of these concepts, and suddenly the business started to grow and, you know, provide more revenue, and it was just exciting. And after that, we said, you know, we have this business, we should put more effort into it, give it a try, give it a go, and see how big can it be. That's kind of the point where it really took off, and I don't know if we felt that the universe kind of came together and helped us bring it to the next level.
I also want to add that, I mean, creativity births out of challenges, and mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to say that the more challenges you have, the more creative you're going to be, not necessarily, but it does force you to figure out solutions and figure out a way to work better and to earn a better living. Do I have an example of that?
Yeah, of a challenge that forced you to be better because of it.
Well, in just in general, like for example, the first apartment that we rented was like $417 a month. Mm-hmm. And then there was a time that I had to call police because the neighbor was yelling and I was afraid somebody was going to get killed or, you know, it was just kind of those environments, and it would just, we didn't want to be in that position any longer. So after the second call that I have to make to the police, we're like, okay, we need to move out to another place. That means more money. Eventually, every decision usually leads to, okay, we need to make more money.
And so that pushes you to do what?
To figure out a way to make more money, to like, in this case, start a company, figure out how we were going to get new clients. And I had learned in high school how to build a website. So we're like, well, Craigslist. We had sold, we had gotten everything from our, for our apartment on Craigslist. We had sold a car that Juan was fixing up on Craigslist. It's just everything we had. We had to gather the resources that were free available online that we could use. And then, so we put up this website, and apparently not many cleaning companies had websites. So it started off like that. And then since we were in this network marketing company, they had green products. So we decided, okay, we will just make it a green cleaning company. And then, so it was just like a huge melting pot of different ideas that we brought together. And it just happens that there were no green cleaning companies in Dallas. And a few years into running the company, we got featured into Daily Candy because they thought it was just such a great idea that a Texas company was green. Right. And it was just like, it was just evolving organically. And once I did the website the first time, I just handed everything down to Juan and he just blew it up to a whole new level. And
let me take this step at a time. I really want to dive into this. So now you guys are seeing, hey, if you run your own company, you get to make 100% of the revenue, not collect just $150 for a week's worth of work. You get to keep it all. So you start your own cleaning business while working for other people. Wherever you can get your own jobs, you do them. Wherever you can't, you do for the other company. You need to get customers. You got your customers you set on Craigslist?
The first ones, yeah.
The first ones on Craigslist. What else did you do to get customers?
They were, oh, see, you're making me retrace my steps. It was so hot. We printed out some flyers. I think we made them on Word or whatever. We printed out really cheesy flyers.
Microsoft Publisher.
Publisher, there you go. So we made this business cards. They were like, I think we still have them. I'll send you a picture of it. There was this business cards with like some green bars. Our name was different at the time, so it was BioClean Made Service, and then we printed a whole bunch of other flyers along with the business cards, and we went around the houses, like in nice neighborhoods, like in Highland Park and different areas in Plano, and we just
put flyers
up and handed out business cards.
Yeah,
how effective was it?
It was, I think we got a couple of clients. Let's say we handed out 400 flyers and we got like two people call back. You know, it was mainly
the people who...
Internet was better.
Who we were cleaning for them. They just like our service. They like the way we did the job and how we treated their pets and so forth. And they just started, letting all their friends know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we got started. And we, the very first client that we had back then, we still have her today. Yeah, it's amazing.
How
did she find you that first customer?
She find us through, what was that?
It was online or
something. Online, yeah.
Because the concierge is, when we used to go to apartments too and give our cards to the concierges and things like that. So sometimes we would get clients from the same building and, making friends with people so that they get to know. And since they saw who actually, it was just the two of us.
Yeah.
So they would know exactly who would be going.
I see. When you first started posting ads on Craigslist and passing out those flyers or posting them everywhere, did you have a website at that point?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
So at least you were sending people to the website. They could then call up and place an order.
Yes.
And that was revolutionary for cleaning people to have websites?
Yeah. 2004? Yeah.
Still 2004.
Still to say, the websites that are out of cleaning companies are of newer companies, not the typical franchises that could possibly have built a decent one.
Yeah. You know what? Frankly, even just a couple of years ago when I was looking in Washington, D.C. for someone, I couldn't find anything online that was significant. I went to the concierge in my building. He gave me a card. That's how I found the person. It wasn't any online anything. I figured he trusts them. They haven't done anything bad to any of the neighbors. Let's do it.
Yeah, that's usually kind of how it worked in the past. Still works today, but most of the people just Google it and find for services, the local area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the website is still pretty plain. Customers are coming mostly through word of mouth, some through Craigslist, very few through flyers. And what really helped you guys take off was getting into Daily Candy. How did you get into Daily Candy then? How did they even find out about you?
You know, it's hard to really tell. they just suddenly contact us, say, hey, we want to write an article about you guys, just out of the blue, really. We don't have any...
We're like, what's Daily Candy?
Yeah, we didn't even know what Daily Candy was, so...
That was in 2007, so it was still...
Not very that, new.
It was still new.
It was not that... It was popular, but not as popular.
Not in Dallas.
But we said, sure, an article, yeah, go ahead, write it, and suddenly they posted it up on the Friday, and during that weekend, we got like 4,000 hits on our site. Something incredible. And we just were like... back then we were using Outlook, Microsoft Outlook, and it made a little beep now. So it was like every 15 minutes, it was like beeping, beep, 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 new clients. It was like incredible.
I do want to point out that during that time, I had taken a part-time job at another company. So I had a 9-to-5 job. I would take the metro or the train, and then it was around downtown Dallas. And it was just, we were trying to figure out how to make this business work, because it's, okay, the cleaning industry, it's not something that you're going to be like, yes, I'm going to make a cleaning company and this is what I'm going to love to do the rest of my life. It's so hard to manage people, to make sure that they go on time to the places that they really put their heart and effort into it. And we were having hardships with that. So we're like, okay, let's do one thing. I'm going to take this job. We're going to live from that job. And whatever we make from the company, we're going to reinvest it into the company. So we build a model that actually meets our lifestyle or the way we want to live. So once we decided to do that within the process, that's when we got the phone call, because we were decided whether or not to keep the business or not. Because if you have a company and it's just getting in the way of what you really want to accomplish, then you have to figure out a way around it. And that's when they gave us the call, and it just they were really excited to talk about the company. They just wanted to ask some questions just to clarify what products we used and things like that for the copy that they wanted to write for the newsletter. And it was a Friday
candy
post. Yeah, it was a Friday, so he stayed Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They usually stay one day because it's Daily Candy. Yeah. So that was another good thing.
And you mentioned something, Karen, that you guys weren't crazy about getting into the maid business for the rest of your lives, right?
Right.
So how do you do a business that you're not that passionate about?
We got passionate about running an online company, and that's what it really turned into,
right,
for me.
It was just an online company.
Online business, yeah.
Gotcha.
We really managed in the way that we wanted to. Most maid services are out there, have a big office. All the people get there. From there, they give them papers where to go. And it's just the way currently is handled. It's just very brick and mortar. The owner is always there waiting for the crews, gives them the products, telling them what to do. And we didn't like that. So we just started, making it more of an online maid service. And that's kind of how, we've been able to run it and, love it. We really love it now because we don't feel it's like a maid service. We just feel it's an online business that provides offline services in the world,
I want to also say that we usually have an annual meeting with our teams, and we had like a round table with some of our senior teams, and they were so happy. We're talking about families that their sole income is the work that they receive from us. So it's when they're so happy working with us, and they look forward to working for many years to come, which is rare in this industry. People usually last maybe a couple months, a day,
maybe a year.
It's very rare to see people working with us 6 years, and they're still very happy about it.
How did you find your people at first?
Craigslist.
Really? So you just post up on Craigslist, and how did you know that they were going to be good people?
We just interview them.
We did interview them in person,
and
background checks,
and basically, give them a try and test them out, and. That's it. I mean,
I guess the fact that we were able to, I mean, we have gotten people through other sources. They refer amongst themselves, mm-hmm. you know, friends or other family members. Some of our teams are related, like their family or cousins or sisters. But one of the requirements was that they were self-starters and self-manageable people. And that's one of the traits that if they were posting ads online to take the initiative to get work, that's something that would qualify them.
Oh, I see. You're looking to see who's posting their services online. And you're figuring, if they're posting their services, they have the kind of attitude that we want. As opposed to putting an ad up saying we're looking for people to clean.
Right.
Exactly.
The E-Myth book that you mentioned earlier by Michael Gerber, I don't want to pass that up. That book was the best book that I got out of my my entrepreneurship professor in college. And it talks about how to systemize your business. And I did that in my first company. Then at Mixergy, I said, I don't want to systemize. This has to be much more creative. How do I systemize all this? And I had an interesting interview with Derek Sivers where I just went back and forth with him on, is this the right way to do it? Or is it just deadening, you know, like it, does it make the system, the company too boring? Anyway, I started using it here at Mixergy. The reason that you're here and pre-interviewed and I know where this is going and I know with confidence it'll be edited properly and so on is because I now use that.
Okay.
How did you use the E-Myth to systemize your business?
Mainly was the process of how clients get to our website and then how that's then turned into a schedule in the calendar. And basically then what the team has to do once they get to the house. So there's a whole process and, you know, from greeting the client up to, you know, exiting the door, what they should to be doing every time. So that's pretty much from website up to when they leave the house. And thereafter, the follow-up process to make them, you know, a recurring client.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you put that system in place?
Well, mainly it's just put in a manual of, you know, what they should be doing at the house. And the other part is like internally us, you know, how once a client gets to our website and books a claim, and then basically, you know, knowing how it gets distributed to what people and who books it. And that's it. I mean,
but putting that organization, you see, the problem that I found as I systemize this, and I imagine the person who's listening to us is going to have this challenge too, is you do something so naturally that you don't even think of the steps that you take to do it, mm-hmm. let alone how to explain it to someone else. And you need something that will assist. I sometimes will hire someone to come sit right here, watch what I do, and notice the things that I don't even notice that I do. Just with a clipboard and pencil, write it down. And then we talk about where do I spend most of my time? How do we systemize that? How do we delegate it and so on? Because I don't notice it on my own. How did you do it?
Well, the hardest part is really the cleaning part of doing the right job every time, right? Mm-hmm. Paul Gerber really insists that the product should be the same every single time. The quality should be the same.
But the house is different every single time. So how do you systemize it?
So there's a manual and there's basically a checklist that they have to go through. But even with checklist, it is not like a, you know, a silver bullet that solves every problem. It's really the people that we hire. They have to be really smart. They have to go, you know, they have to be self-starters. They have to know exactly how to leave this client happy. So there is not an exact recipe or formula to make that happen. It's just a matter of, you know, getting the right people on board, giving them these procedures, and then letting them do the job. So that's...
Read the procedures? I wonder if people even read the manual sometimes that I put together.
Well, we made it online, so they have to go through like online training
and
certification, as we call it. And out of that, they, you know, have to take tests and quizzes. So we make sure they
read. I see. So to get the job with you, you create, you teach, and then you quiz, and you make sure that they get certified.
Right.
What software do you use to do that? Sorry, Karen, you were going to say, what software?
The one that actually
has that. Yeah, there's one called Digital Chalk.
Digital Chalk?
Right.
Okay.
And then pretty much it's just, I did an introduction video explaining how it worked, and then it's just, I created some slide presentations, and it has the software for you to upload and do all of this, but some slide presentations with the operations manual on the software, and then it's just my voice recording going over it.
And so you say, you need to do this, this, and that. And then person, after they finish watching the video, you test them to make sure that they learned what you said.
Yeah. Right. And then I was talking, you know, touching on the subject of like every home is different. I was talking about this with a trainer team that's training right now. And then, it's just, if you boil it down, it's very simple. We call it, there's the wet areas and the dry areas. There's the kitchen bathrooms and the mopping up floors. And then there's the vacuuming, well, yeah, vacuuming, dusting, and then taking the trash out. Mm-hmm. And yeah, every home is different. And that's why we send the same team to the same house, because they get to know the house over and over. You know, right. The different knickknacks or the different things that the client likes, that they like the shoes cleaned always, you know, this way. Not that we clean the shoes, but like the way that people get used to the way the team arranges, let's say if they have to vacuum in the closet and they move the shoes and they put them back in a certain order, people get used to that. And if you change the team, they notice and they start like, oh, maybe they did something else different. And they start looking around, like, if the rug's in the right place and things like that. So it's just to you know, for confidence that the client has a trust that the same client is going to be there, the same team is going to be there, I'm sorry. And then for the team to be able to know exactly what they need to do in the home, the same place, the same time. And then also, their checklist is pretty extensive. And one of our senior teams told us, you know, this is a lot, but they're used to doing it over and over, that when they go every task, you know, every single task, they're like, oh, I already know this. Like, it's already in their minds. They don't have to think through it. When they go to a bathroom, they know they start from top to bottom.
Is this
and
a paper checklist?
Yeah.
So let's talk about how you digitize then. One of the cool things about your company, about GMAIDS, and I said this at the top of the interview, is that you bring new technology to an old business. What's some of the way that you guys modernize this technology that felt to me for a long time like the internet completely ignored it?
Well, the first part was mainly the booking on the website and paying online. I mean, we've been receiving payments from back then, which still most services don't take payments on their website.
They want cash in an envelope, you leave it by the door.
Yes, and check. So that was the first thing to really automate that, and people really like to pay something online. I mean, it's very natural for us nowadays, but in 2004, you know, most services in general, not just maid services, most home services are always taking cash or you know, a check. So that was the first step. Then after, mainly, you know, putting all the training online, instead of giving them paper to where to go, they just access an online calendar and basically, you know, they know where to go. So eliminating
that
paper. We did.
You did. I mean, you as a company, you guys internally.
Not myself, but yeah, it's internal.
What do you mean? Who, if not you, then who, Karen? I mean,
we had a developer helping.
You hired a developer to do this. This is early on. You were already at a place where you can hire a developer to do it. How'd you find the developer?
Odis, Elance.
Gotcha. So
this, you know, outsourcing sites.
I mean, Yeah, it was just whatever podcast that he heard, any resource, any reference to, he would go check it right away at night. He was very diligent with that. You know, sometimes we hear information, and then, oh, later, next year. He would, even if it was something that he wouldn't necessarily implement right away, he would go to the website and then put a date for an action date for him to do that.
So if he was in the audience right now, if the old you was in the audience right now, and you heard Karen say digital chalk is what you use to train your people, you would have written that down and said, we may not have the team yet, but when we do, this is what we're going to use.
Right.
Yeah. I remember driving, listening to your interviews.
You do?
Yeah. We have a Scion, and then the one that we've had several Scions. He's like addicted to like the Scions, the BB, the square ones. But we had one that had a screen. So we would drive with your interview with whoever you were interviewing. So we would listen in the car whenever we were driving in traffic.
Wow.
So yeah. And I remember like taking notes and things like that. So it's just very, I mean, it doesn't take.
What kind of notes? You guys seem to absorb stuff. By the way, let me get back to the notes and first say that I've got emails here from you, Juan, from going back to 2009. You found the $1 billion jackpot that I did at grab.com years ago. You found that, you emailed it to me, and you said, hey, just checked your, I guess it was on a YouTube channel, came across this $1 billion video you gave away on grab.com, and you started asking me about that. Yeah, it looks like we went back and forth a couple of times. I told you how Warren Buffett was the big winner on that one. Mm-hmm. We talked about interviews. There's a way that you're listening. First of all, you're interacting, which makes you different than most people. But there's a way that you're listening. Karen, you said you were taking notes. If you were listening to this podcast, to this interview, how would you take notes? What would you do with it? What would you write down?
I mean, just figure out what you have in your life right now and make it happen. I mean, sometimes we're like, oh, it's a cleaning company. How much bigger can I get? Or it's, I don't know, if you're a babysitter. I just met somebody recently that wants to start a babysitting company, and I just happened to tell her, well, I have a cleaning company. Maybe I can share some of the things that I've learned. And we started, you know, talking about it, and it's just like the next day she texts me, so do you start your company as an LLC or a C Corp? So it's just like, it doesn't take that hard, you know, it's not that hard to go and do the research right away. So I mean, don't judge small beginnings. But in general, I would just take notes of like if there's any sort of technology that like the one for the certification, the digital chalk. If you need something like that, then go check it out. If it meets your what you need, perfect. If not, don't stop there. Find something else.
I see. So basically, you're saying to yourself, what's an issue that we have? And then if we're listening to this interview and there's someone and they mention a solution that could work for us, you note that down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if there's something that you're not ready for, but you think you might need down the road, you note that down too.
And just principles, whatever principles. I don't have my cell phone next to me, but I have notes from like conferences and meetings back from 2009 and 2000.
We've always had the attitude of learning, really. I mean, we just like to learn, and we're always, you know, reading and listening to stuff and, you know, capturing as much as we can and eventually implementing as we need to. But that's been mainly the attitude we have. We just want to learn. And so that's it.
Is your revenue higher than it was back when Neil blogged about you?
Yeah.
It is. Significantly higher?
Yeah.
Okay, I won't ask anymore. Why did you change the company name from BioClean to G-Made?
let me share this one. Typically, if you're going to start a company, you're going to Google that name that you think you're thinking of to see if there's anybody else with the same name. Well, as much as we should have done that, we didn't. Which, oh, biodegradable products, cleaning, BioClean. What happens is that the term BioCleaning is referred to cleaning crime scenes.
Oh, I see.
And biohazardous waste. So definitely not our type of industry.
You created a cleaning, you know, wrong association in the mind.
And so. Not many people really know. Like, for example, you didn't know, right?
I didn't realize that. I thought BioClean was a good name. And then I Googled it. I see.
Right. Exactly. So then he chomped down like 3 books on branding and marketing. And this one time I got home like from grocery shopping. I remember I was running errands. And he's like, I have the name. You know, it's like this eureka moment, and he's like, G-Mates. I'm like, G-Mates? G-Mates. It's stuck. So,
but I mean, mainly, I was looking to really create a brand, right? Most companies are called, I don't know, you know, Rositas Cleaning Service or something very generic. And there's thousands of maid services in Dallas and around the country. So very few companies have really catchy names or brands. So part of being on the image is like I wanted to create a brand that could go nationwide, right? So I had to find a name that I could trademark and that I could really, you know, tell the world that was unique. Just one name, nobody else has that name. The domain should be open. I have like a checklist of 10 things before naming a company that a name should really have. You know, one of them is like the .com. Most of the time should be available, trademarkable. It should be unique, should be short, should be less than 7 words. Some of those things, some of those things really help us shape that name. And sometimes you should mention the category of the service.
Right, so people know what it is.
Aids, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You had to take out a loan to make this change.
We had to make a loan to build some of the website part.
Where'd you get the money?
That was
credit union.
It was like a credit union for Latinos in Dallas. So,
for startup businesses, yeah.
It was a small loan, and they just, you know, they asked, you know, very few collateral and stuff. We just put that we had a few computers and
like a computer
and that's in a car and that's it. And so, but that's
something that would amount to that same number that we were asking for.
That dollar amount.
Here's the curious thing. You guys were eating ramen for a long time and it was frustrating.
Yeah.
You were just to rebrand your site and rebuild it, you need to take a loan. You're struggling. Today you're not, but you're struggling. And all along you had this belief that you need to give people money. You need to, you know, donate. Talk about this 10% donate. Where does this come from?
Well, you know, we're Christians. So, you know, God mentions that you should, you know, return 10% of your income to the church. So we started doing that when we were making really, you know, small amounts of money. And we said, well, if this is true, it should work, right? If it's, you know, if not.
See, you're testing the Bible system that if it's true and we donate 10% of our money, then life should be better. All right, I like the scientific approach. So what happened after you did?
So we did, and our first tithe was like, you know, like $60. It was really small. And we kept, you know, doing it for, you know, 6 months to a year. And we saw that our life really changed and our income increased because God says that, you know, your 90% will be, you know, pretty much enough to cover for the rest of the things.
And you were doing this even when you had $60 with the first $60?
Yeah.
As soon as we could, we start basically, you know, returning the tithe. So we believed it, and then suddenly things start changing slowly after. We keep doing it, and we don't really believe of stopping it. And some people don't agree that you should, you know, that the churches are just taking your money. We believe that really there is a God, and that, you know, we should honor that part. And you know, we've seen the results in our life. We're it's not just financial results. You know, God provides in other miraculous ways. You know, it gives you, you know, family, it gives you peace, it gives you health, and some other things that really money can buy. And that's mainly how we, you know, we believe that, and we enjoy it and do it now.
You know, when I was a kid, I used to read Jeffrey Archer novels. And Jeffrey Archer novels, there's always like a kid who's scrappy, who has a wheelbarrow that he uses to sell fruit from, and then he builds that up into this empire, and pretty soon he becomes Conrad Hilton and he owns the world. And all that. A big part of those stories was giving away a portion of your money. Even back when the kid was just a hustler and a teenager and just trying to sell his fruit, 10% would go. And it wasn't a religious thing. There was some belief there that if you do it, your outlook on life changes. Karen, what have you noticed? What happens to you when you donate money?
I guess it kills some of the greed, or it kills the greedy part in you. It's just you always have something to give. Like, even if somebody doesn't have necessarily a huge income, they, whatever they give, I think God honors that because that's the best that you can give. I mean, you have 10 apples, just give one apple. See what I mean? For the most part, I think it kills the greed, and it forces you to be more organized. In my own part, that's how I started doing the financial part of the business. I don't know if we mentioned this, but Juan takes care of more of the marketing and the website and things like that, getting new clients. And I manage some of the training of the teams and the financial aspect of it. So I remember I had this little notepad where I would carry, like, I would write down every expense that I would make and, you know, every dollar that came in, I would write it down. So it was a way for me to keep track of what we made so that we would give our tithe, but also to keep track of our expenses and manage what we were making, our hard-earned money, you know, make sure that we're not overspending or you know, it forces you to be less greedy and less organized and more organized.
But it really changed. I think you were going for, like, it really changes you in the inside.
How? That's what I'm going for. Because here's the thing, that I'm looking at the notes that Jeremy made on the pre-interview conversation that he had with you. And the one line that I underlined here about this topic is, It changed everything when we started donating. We were struggling with money and still giving 10% of our income. If you can do that at your lowest point, the act of giving just will attract more money in your life. And that's what happened to you. At one point, we were making just $12,000 a year and we still donated $1,200. We lived on 90%. They're just principles that we live by. And that's the thing. But what happens to your mind? Do you feel like this, if I give, then I'm telling my subconscious mind I'm going to get even more, that I'm not so desperate that I can't. What are you thinking?
It's not exactly like, oh, I'm expecting more money. It's just that once you're able to walk away from money, your mind, your focus is just not money. You're focused on greater things. And it's just, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but your focus stops being money. You know, every time you start a business,
you can surrender that.
Yeah, most people just, oh, money, 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 right? And once you're thinking always on money, you know, everything you do is for money, then you start treating your clients different, you start doing things in another way. But when your focus is not just money, but in creating a, you know, better experience for your client, or, you know, being a different type of person, you act differently, you talk differently, people perceive you differently. And, you know, and we believe then good things start coming back. So, you know, some people start helping you out. Suddenly, Daily Candy gives you an article. We've never paid for advertising. We never paid for press. And every year we get interviews and press. And it's just, I mean, it's hard to explain. You just have to try it. And, and you know, it could be to church. It could be to help, you know, other people.
Could it be to Mixergy? Like, can I just ask people to start tithing to Mixergy?
They could if they wanted to.
Interesting.
But the point is,
can I undercut the church by saying I only need 9% and see if that?
Oh my God.
No, that doesn't work.
Well, basically,
how many miracles can you work up?
The fact that we can actually record right now with no hiccups, I feel is a miracle. Maybe maybe your connection to the church has helped. Usually there are issues with the internet connection.
Mainly when you help other people that are in need, you know, I believe good things start coming your way, because you're helping somebody that, you know, needs a hand, and then you get back some help again. And if you notice, most wealthy people, you know, the big wealth,
they're
always donating people. They're always donating money. They have foundations. They have scholarship programs. They're always giving back to the community. So it's, you know, it's a principle, it's a life principle. And if you use it, you know, there are advantages for it.
And some of the times we think, oh, when I have a lot of money, when I have $1 million, I'm going to give away some money. That never happens.
You never get there, really.
Something small. Yeah.
You never get to that million.
It's just a way of thinking.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the benefits of all this hard work. You guys were in Colombia in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there? Do you know what I'm talking about? That you were there, and what happened to the company? Who managed the company, and how did you guys get it to keep going?
Well, online, obviously, as everything was coming, but we had the very first iPhone 3G back then. So we were basically, our calls were getting translated by Google Voice. And we were just texting clients back and forth. Obviously, there was not so much volume as it is today. So it was a lot easier to reply an email here and there. We were kind of like doing things, you know, during the day, doing tours, knowing the city, you know, traveling. And then in the mornings, we would go into cafe, a small, you know, internet cafe, and then reply to some emails. And at night, we just grab our laptop or phone and just reply to a couple of emails.
But mostly you were managing your business using your iPhone 3G.
Yeah, mainly.
And I also don't want to overlook the fact that you guys aren't just doing houses. You also are doing businesses, right? So your clients have included people at Accenture, Ernst & Young. Do you guys do work for Ernst & Young, or people who work there?
Mainly the clients, yes, the executives that work
there. Dallas Mavericks, you guys did professional work for them or home?
A player.
For one of the players. Oh, really? Which one?
And,
no, we cannot say that.
Can't? Which one? Yeah. What's his address?
Oh, that's the privacy of our clients.
All right. I got it. Actually, I don't got anything.
We just did an NFL player as well lately.
Let me ask you this. Someone's watching this the way that you guys would have watched this before. They want to learn from your experience. What's the one thing that you want them to take away from this conversation that you did right, that if they do that and they just take that one thing away from this interview, their lives are going to be better?
I will say, really loving and really creating a product that really you enjoy selling. because at first it's going to be really hard to sell something. So, and it's not going to take a lot of traction. So you need a few years to really make some product get somewhere. So you need to really, really be enjoying that solution, really love that product, you know, in order to really sell it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that's like from the marketing product aspect, but from the inside of you, you're as an entrepreneur, you really need to be learning every day and, you know, doing the right things. That means, you know, not stealing, not lying, just being the right type of person that, you know, brings those good things into your life. That's the one thing I would say, you know, just do the right things and the right things will come back to you eventually.
And still, you say, love what you're doing. And still, I'm looking again at the notes from the pre-interview. I love that we do this kind of research. And you told Jeremy that one of your biggest challenges was lack of love for the business.
Right.
And so can you tell me a little bit about that internal wrestling match?
Yeah, since when we were starting to clean, obviously we were just doing it for the money, right? And we were doing another business. After the EMIT, and we saw that the business started to grow, we start falling in love with our product, with our company, with our name, with everything that we were offering. So that changed everything as well. You know, once you see that the owner really puts the heart into the product, you get a better product. You give a better experience to your clients. You know, you don't put so many fees. You just treat them differently. All of these things eventually make you grow your business. You eventually start loving your business because it's, you know, giving you money, it's providing for you, for your family. So that's kind of the things that it changed once, you know, that this fight inside.
Okay. Let me do a quick plug here. And then I want to come back and ask you guys about, well, this controversy that happened on my site in the comments. Apparently you guys have a lot of fans and I want to talk about what happened.
Okay.
During the charity part, I don't know if you were going to ask that, but did you wanted us to talk about the time that we didn't have a car? Is that what you were leaning to? Or
you know what? I didn't, but tell me about that. There's a reason why you didn't have a car. What happened?
Okay. Do you want to say?
Yeah.
Okay.
You do it.
Okay.
I'll come back to the plug.
Yeah.
This is more important.
So the reason why we didn't have a car, part of the part of our lifestyle was to give back, and it got to a point that we gave away our car. And then it's just one of the things that I don't really – can I start over again?
Do it. I mean, okay. We don't edit it out. Let people see that, you know, we don't speak perfectly. Go for it.
Okay. So pretty much that when we didn't have a car It was a moment where we were tired of the way that we were living. We had no idea what was the solution to it. We didn't necessarily have a mentor in the cleaning industry. We had approached a couple of people, but they couldn't give us much information because of the job descriptions that they have. They wouldn't allow them to give much information or mentor other cleaning companies, executives. That had high positions. So to make a point, we had no idea what was the next step. And out of faith and desperation, we gave away our car to a church that we were attending at the time. And it's just one of those rare things that my family still doesn't understand why on earth we did that. It's just one of the things that we felt it was the right thing to do. We felt led to that. And during that time period, it was 3 months that we didn't have a car, we still had to work. So we would go clean houses on the bus. So
you'd take a bus with the cleaning supplies.
We take a bus. We have pictures of that too. I mean, I used to carry my camera everywhere where we went, and so that we would remember where we came from, and just the fact that we were taking pictures, it made it a fun experience. So we would take pictures and then drive on the bus, get to the house. Some of the clients were like, what do you mean you came on the bus? There's buses that come here. And then we would go back home, and that lasted for about 3 months. But it's just like crazy stuff happened. Like random people would stop by and give us rides.
Sometime a lady just stopped by
and give us cash.
Give us $100.
It was just like, it was such a weird period in our time in our lives.
But then you gave away your car.
Right. But then where I want to go is that there was a point where I'm like, God, we gave you this car. And I thought this like miraculous thing was going to happen. And then I just thought in my heart, like, you know, what are you doing about it? So I just went online and looked for a car, and I found one that was like for, I think it was $600. Mm-hmm. It was like way discounted. And we got it, and that weekend we got a car, and that like changed my life forever. It's just like one of those lessons that we needed to learn of taking action immediately and taking your own steps. And it's just such a strange story for me still, because I still don't understand all of it. But some of the things that we learned during that time, we still reminisce about it. And well, just that experience and that lesson. We encountered several people that we learned a lot from as far as business is concerned, and people that we connected to, the lawyer that we started working with.
Because you didn't have a car, you connected with them?
Well, you start finding solutions. Like we used to go to the local resource business center for the area. So we would walk there and go to seminars. The first person that advises in accounting and things like that. It's just like
the EMIT book came from one of those meetings.
Right.
Which changed
help. I see. So what you're saying is that it just pushed you to be more resourceful.
Right.
And to trust.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, your level of faith and, you know, and I don't know, inside of you, you just get so brave and so adventurous that you're just going to do anything that it takes to do to make things happen. So, you know, you lose any fear of doing things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, doing this is not very comfortable. Giving a car away is not comfortable.
I'm not suggesting it.
Yeah.
FYI. But,
I don't know. It's just we've been always in the growing part of ourselves. So giving this thing away, helping others, just really pushes you to the limit where, you know, your mind just enters into a different level of, you know, of how things should work. So it's mainly that.
All right. Yeah. You know, I had a past interviewee who started talking about his faith and started talking about his, I guess I'll leave it a faith. And I said, all right, I think we've heard enough about that. Let's go back to business. And the audience, and rightfully so, just ripped into me in the comments, said, you cut him off. We're curious about this. We can't keep feeding us the same thing over and over. When someone gives you a new idea, shut up and listen.
Right, and it's not something
so I'm listening here.
Yeah, thank you. It's not something that we usually talk about. And, you know, if we met you today, it's not something that I would tell you right away. It's just something very personal that I think it's important to talk about it, because it's what made us into what we are today. And it set a strong foundation.
Yeah.
It's a strong character.
You know, success,
we're indestructible.
In your business is not always being a great marketer, being, you know, copywriter, being very smart selling something. Sometimes it's a different level of knowledge that you need. So, you know, most of your interviews, you're probably people tell you all these different tricks and tactics to how to sell more, how to gain customers. But sometimes it's, in our case, yeah, it's been some of that, but it's been some of the really the growth inside of us as entrepreneurs, as persons of faith, that has helped us grow our business. You know, many people will not really tell you about this, but that's what really helped us.
Let me do a quick plug here for Mixergy, because I know most people listen to these interviews for my plugs.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right? They're fast forwarding, getting right to this point. They go, wait a minute, what happened to the plug? I got to give you the plug, guys. Here it is. Go to MixergyPremium.com if you're someone like the three of us who believes in the value of learning, if believe in the pleasure of learning. Go to MixergyPremium.com. We have over 800 interviews, almost 100 courses at this point that you can pop into your MP3 player and take with you on road trips, on the bus to your cleaning, work, on the train to your school, the way I used to when I was in New York and used to go to NYU. Wherever you are, you just listen to it and you learn from people who will teach you what they did to succeed. And I'm going to suggest a few people based on this conversation. First of all, I'm going to suggest you check out Bob Berg, The Go-Giver, since we're talking about the power of giving. Bob's book was fantastic, The Go-Giver. I invited him here to teach what entrepreneurs need to learn about giving and receiving. And that course is one I highly recommend. Number two, I recommend my conversation with Derek Sivers that turned me around on this whole systems thing. If you're someone who needs to be turned around, go look up Derek Sivers and you'll see that he talked about that. It's the interview called Leadership with Stories. And then two others. I'm going to recommend Sam Carpenter, both his book and his interview for systemizing. It's fantastic. If you're not into reading the book, listen to this interview for an hour. I'm telling you, it's going to show you how to organize your business. And finally, we have actually courses within Mixergy that I recommend. Justin Rothmarsh, Systemizing Your Sales. And also, I'm just recommending so much. If you really want to automate your online sales, Jermaine Griggs, tons of systems, tons of courses. Go to mixergypremium.com right now. Sign up. And I guarantee you'll love it. And frankly, if you don't love it, I'll give you your money back and I want to hear. I think that there's maybe even more value to me in hearing why you don't love it than your $25. So part of me hopes that you sign up, cancel, and then say, Andrew, this sucks because, and the reason I want to hear that is because I use that because to improve our work here. But go to mixergypremium.com. You'll love it. And one way or the other, I'm going to love that you did it. All right, two things we got to get to very quickly. First, before I talk about this thing in the comments, you got to tell me what maidsradar.com is because that's your new business. What is this?
Well, MaidsRadar basically is an iOS app that allows consumers to find maid services in real time. The reason this came for is the last year I've been getting so many calls, people asking for service today, tomorrow. And in reality, I sell these pods weeks before, so I always say, no, I'm sorry, I can't. And
you're telling me if I wanted a cleaning service today.
Today, yes, today,
even if
now.
I'm in your area, even if I happen to be in Dallas, you're going to have to say no because you're booked.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's hard. It's really hard. And most companies, if they're some kind of successful, they'll have this issue. They sell these pods weeks before. So MaidsRadar, what allows is other maid services to publish in real time via the website, there are available times and that are open for today and tomorrow. And on the other side, consumers just download an iOS app and basically they're able to see who's available now. It solves that problem, very simple. Customers in the past used to go to Google and start calling each company to find out who can come today and it takes hours. So now with this app, they just basically downloaded it and see who's available. You will be able to see us, GMates there, and also other companies that are available. So,
gotcha.
I'm not taking the business, but I'm passing it to someone else who can really take care of it, you know.
All right, I can see it. You're a married person. You promise your partner you're going to clean the apartment before your guests come over tonight. Things happen. You didn't end up cleaning. You go to maidsradar.com, download the iOS app, hit the button, and they come over and they clean for you. That's the idea here. That's the business that you guys are building next. And I urge people to go check that out. I'm going to come back and say one more thing about maidsradar.com, actually give it one more plug. But first, let me ask you about this thing that erupted in the comments. And another entrepreneur come on here who talked about his online maid business. And then people said, wait a minute, Andrew, you missed the fact that he really copied GMaids. And you guys had a trademark issue there.
Right.
What happened?
Well, I think Karen could start with that because she was the one that discovered this, the whole thing.
Well, it's funny because somebody sent me an email about this thread, this discussion thread about somebody that was explaining how he started his company, and he mentioned our website, that's how he based his own website from. And they sent me an email, you should be checking out this conversation, what they're talking about, because I think you should be interested in it. And it happened that this guy had broken down our website and pretty much duplicated it.
Copied and pasted. There were parts that were so similar. People in the comments, I think, said, or maybe an email that actually referenced your site. So his site suddenly had GMaids in.
Yeah, the copy had actually.
The copy had GMaids in it. Yeah. GMaids is going to clean your house, so because he forgot to change that. Okay.
Right. So to that point, and then we sent him an email. Hey, what's going on? And we were trying to be amicable about it. The person with whom Juan spoke with, he said, okay, we'll take it away. We take the part that is the problem. They deleted some of it, but then it came back. So I didn't give much attention. I'm like, well, he's not even in our state. It's not a big deal. Just good luck. but it also encouraged Juan to find the interest is catching up to what we're doing. I need to push it further. So that's how MaidsRadar came to fruition. And then afterwards, somebody sent me an email, hey, this guy has been interviewed by Andrew Warner in New Mixtry. I'm like, I know him. I've met him before. Why is he interviewing this guy? That's what I thought. I mean, and then I'm like, I'm just going to send him an email. So that's when I'll send you, hey, you should check more about, you know, who you're interviewing and things like that. I didn't say much. I mean, you can read the email out loud.
I got the email right here. I won't read it.
It's fine. And then, but it's just interesting how other people kept referencing it back to it. I didn't went looking for it. I didn't go looking for what this guy was doing. But after a while, it kept building up into like an issue in the sense that he was using our name, our trademark. So we had to hire a lawyer and then go through the process. But in a nutshell, it's just something that it was something nasty that happened, but it turned out something good. I mean, we're in an interview with you, and then Juan built another product with his other company, and then
it pushed you because was he doing better than your business?
Well, he mentions that he does. Eventually he started selling his company on Flippa. He was mentioning he was making $70,000 a month, and then he eventually sold it for $27,000. And he said that mainly it's because he didn't have time and so forth. So in my experience, you know, running or growing a maid service business, I mean, it's hard enough to really, like, once you reach $70,000 a month, selling it for $20,000 is just totally doesn't make any sense. So I don't believe he was really that big. He was just advertising that and making noise, but trying to, you know, make money out of his website, but in reality he didn't have a real company behind it, because I mean, starting a maid service or any service industry, it's not just like putting a website and hiring people. It really takes more than that, and that's something I share on my blog. It says, you know, if you're going to build a business like this, you really need to build a business, not just put a website and hope people to come and book, you know, services. So I mean, that's mainly what I think.
And there's a lot of human resource management, because it's an online business from our end, but it's offline because we need to send people to actually do the job. So the, mm-hmm. so the whole process is not completed until the team finishes their day. So it's bought online, but it's delivered offline. It's managing the people and the whole work load of systematizing to make sure that every home is cleaned at the highest level that we possibly can. Managing that, it's much more work than people usually think. And I don't know, I know they were selling templates of like copies of our website and things like
that.
The
other person was.
Yeah.
It's not just, hey, I'm going to copy it, but anyone can copy it in your local city. I'm going to give you the design and the copy and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't cheat, obviously, but so, I mean, some people on Reddit were, you know, telling me where they got him. So,
but my point is, like, I'm not sure if selling just a template is completely honest and genuine, because you have this whole another part of the business that if you buy a template for a company for $5,000, that doesn't mean you're gonna have a successful cleaning company, because you have all these other people and all these half part of the other of the business that you still need to deal with.
I'll say 90% of the side of the business is managing people. 10% is really the website and selling service. Yeah.
All right.
But it's so really good that you joined this. I mean, somebody would have just emailed back, well, I'm sorry, too bad.
No, this is the part that bothers me. When someone tells me, hey, Andrew, you're not optimizing your SEO, like even Neil Patel for months, for maybe even years, said, get transcripts up on your site. It's going to help with your search engine optimization. I kept saying, nah, I'm not really interested. Eventually I did it because I couldn't keep saying no to people. That doesn't bother me. When they say, hey, you got that wrong, you didn't push here, that's when I get lit up. And I even emailed you back, Karen. I said, well, here, I did address it, but maybe I could have addressed it even more. So I showed you, and I also let you know, this bothers me. If I got the story wrong, if I didn't push an entrepreneur to be honest and open, then I am set. All right. I don't know exactly where the honest line is there. All I could do is allow him to say his piece, and there's no way for me to look at it. Some entrepreneurs show me their books before I have them on. I didn't ask him to do it. But all I could do is just leave it as it was, and the audience will be able to figure out which other interview we're talking about. I don't need to say it. Instead, what I need to finish off with is maidsradar.com. That's where people can see what you guys are up to. Also, Juan, you mentioned your blog. Let me look for it, because what I like about your blog is, yes, there's some religious stuff on there, which I think will draw some people over, but also there are cars on there. Yeah. I was eating lunch here in just preparation for this interview, and I went and I looked at the this guy who souped up his Porsche 911, and I said, this is what Juan is like. Juan is getting ready for one day owning a nice car, a good garage. He's an ambitious person, and I dig that about your blog. It's juanchaparro.com.
Yeah.
Right? And you guys also have a company blog at gmaids.tumblr.com. Do I have this right?
The Tumblr is, yeah, it's kind of like a blog, but just mainly to put things for ladies, for the audience who follows us. Yeah. But the company blog is really under gmaids.com, /community. They can find it on the bottom part of our website.
One of my favorite parts is in your personal blog, the happy photo of the two of you in the upper right.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's the thing here, right? You guys took the bus. You guys gave away your stuff. You guys suffered through ramen. I have the dirty words that you guys use to talk about how much you hate your ramen. And here you are, happy, doing well, inspiring other people. And I'm so glad that you did this interview. I used to just wonder, at the time that you emailed me, Juan, I was going through this period thinking, I think I was in Buenos Aires, and I was going, I mean, I'm doing all this, like I'm renting this big office just to do interviews. What a joke you are, Andrew. No one's paying attention to this. You don't need this whole thing just for this. Right. No one's out there anyway. I can't believe how much that was going through my head. If only I would have just shut that voice and said, wait a minute, look who's emailing you. Someone is out there. At some point, this will have influence and they will build successful businesses because of it. If only I would have done that, maybe I would have enjoyed my time, that early days in Buenos Aires, more. But the good news is now I'm enjoying it, because as people can obviously see, I see that this does have some impact. I wasn't a fraud. I was doing something meaningful.
Right.
It does. So it does. I mean, you know, it's hard to measure it, but it does. I mean,
thank you.
It's really working in people's hearts and minds and helping them shape and become better.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for doing that. And thank you for contributing to that by helping, sharing your story. And hopefully, what was it, like 4 years ago you and I first emailed? Hopefully in 4 years from now, 2017, someone will email us. And please do not hide it. Email me, Juan, and Karen, or any one of us, and tell us how you were shaped by this interview. I know I was, and I'm going to thank you guys for doing this, and thank everyone for being a part of it. Thank you, guys. Bye.